Justin. Oh, Justin.
Yeah, what's up?
We're back. We just did our deluxe bonus episode for our Patreon supporters.
Bonus episode.
We did, we did. Because, hey, here's a life update. I got engaged this weekend.
Woo!
I know. So, if you are interested in hearing that story, you can subscribe to us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. I'm sure it'll come up eventually, but, I mean, like, we got, like, went in depth about, like, how it all happened and whatever else. But anything happened to you interesting this week?
Interesting things that happened to me. Well, you know, speaking of your engagement, my sister-in-law has just been engaged. So we went to their engagement party. That was our big thing. And I just, we kind of talked about this in the bonus episode, but I think there's something so fun about like the process of getting married, all the different steps along the way. That's just super fun. And like you're going to be in for so much fun over the next couple, months as we run to the wedding. So I think that stuff is just really cool. Just being around family and stuff like that is going to be a lot of fun for you.
Something else that I think we didn't talk about this, but like, it's not that I didn't think it was a big deal, but it's been nice to see that other people think it's a big deal.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? I don't mean this in a self-deprecating way, but I feel like I don't get celebrated very often. You know what I mean? Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like people calling me saying like, we're so happy for you. Mm-hmm. And like, it's so nice that people are so excited for us. That is what I'm getting at. Like it's so rare to hear how people actually feel about you. I feel know? And so it's nice to have people like, saying, you know, this, that, and whatever. But so on top of that, I also did go to Canada, which was make my light a little warmer here.
You're pretty international over here.
I know. So I was in Canada for MIGS 2024, which is the Montreal, I'm going to say International Games Show, which MIGS. Believe it or not, Montreal is a hotbed for game development. They had a sizzle reel of like, you know, here are a handful of games that have been developed from Montreal. And it's like Dead Space and like Baldur's Gate and like all sorts of different studios are from Montreal. Like Ubisoft is from Montreal based and all that sort of stuff. So I got to chat with some devs and do some interviews and stuff like that. I picked up a mobile GPS based RPG called Orna, which is like, it's basically like a full JRPG. Let's see here. It's like a full JRPG that's like GPS based in the same way that like Pokemon Go is.
That's pretty cool.
It's kind of fun. And so I've been playing a little bit of that. But
is it encouraging you to walk or can you do it from your house?
So see if I can't show you this here. You see there's like this ring. There's like this circle around me. Like that is an interactivity like
circle.
Yeah. So basically you can interact with anything that's in there and anything that's not you have to walk for. So there's like plenty to do like just like sitting at home essentially. But got to talk to that dev, one of those devs. And yeah, it was a great time all around. Got to hang out with some of the people who make Outlast from Red Barrels. Hosted a panel with them. It was a good time. Not a whole lot of like news comes out of MIGS because it's more of like a trade show.
Yeah.
More of you know what I mean? Like it's not like a convention where like things get announced. Like for example, like the big news from MIGS was like Outlast has signed a film adaptation with Lionsgate.
I mean, that might be a good show. Like I can see that being an interesting
100%. But that wasn't like MIGS news. They just were there when that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we were like trying to figure out like to do content around it. Like, do we even like, you know, like mention MIGS in the title? I'm like we can, but like, that's not like people
it's
aren't
not
Googling
part of
like,
the, MIGS.
The same way you Google like Gamescom or whatever else.
So out of all the panels and places, people that you talked to, what was the most interesting thing you heard?
So I ended up sitting and chatting with someone from goodness. What was it called? It was called Kiosk Masons, and they are a 3D modeling outsource company.
Okay.
So like they do a lot of like character modeling work for different studios. And it was really interesting because I feel like a lot of like outsourcing stuff that you hear about in games, like you kind of associate outsourcing a little bit the same way you do like movie reshoots where you're like, oh no, it's in trouble. If it's got like a lot of outsourcing, a lot of like reshoots or something like that. But that's just not the case. And so hearing from him like was really interesting because like they designed Isaac Clarke in the Dead Space remake. And like, that's such an important task, and to give that to an outside contractor seems like, why would you do that? But it's like, oh, because this is a very normal industry thing
to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's just extra hands. You know what I mean? And so it was interesting hearing about like how you structure business then too, in an industry that's so volatile. They talked about like, well, it's nice that you know we're independent, so we're unaffected by layoffs and stuff like that. And okay, if a project gets canceled because we have, you know, so many different like projects going on, it's not the end of the world for us. And so by being independent, we're able to sort of like resist the tide of a lot of the industry garbage that's going on right now, because we don't have to worry about that sort of stuff. It's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. That's interesting. So
yeah, I feel like one of the things that the more trade shows and stuff like that you go to, like we understand like some of the video game industry, right? Like from like the consumer perspective, but really understanding that business side, I think is kind of an interesting dark hole in my brain that I don't really know about, because I haven't really like, I'm not in the business of like selling and making video games, you know, I'm in the business of consuming. Like, yeah.
When would that ever come up?
Yeah, I mean, it's like,
you know, like I try not to put a whole lot of stock into whenever people are like, oh, development trouble. Cause it's like, it's fucking video game. That's what happens.
Right.
But like, You can't help but like when you hear like, oh, they're outsourcing all this stuff, you're like, oh, goodness, it's going to be in trouble. But like hearing from an outsourcer saying like, it does not mean that. You're like, oh, OK.
No, and sure. It means we have a job. Yay.
Yeah. Great. I will say, too. So I was in Montreal, which is very French Canadian. I did not expect this. It's not like French Canadian. It's like French. They like lead with French. Like people speak to you first in French, and if you don't speak French, they like roll their eyes.
They're all wearing scarves and walking around.
Yeah. That's so I learned how to say there's I know two phrases in French. I learned this to go this weekend, which is je ne parle pas français, which is I don't speak French, and then the other one is je ne suis pas un espion, which is I'm not a spy.
Oh, I thought you were gonna. Why did you have to say that second one?
So I know how to say that in four languages. English, right?
Uh-huh.
Spanish, no soy un espía. Uh-huh. And then Tagalog, in the Acomag na Nakao. Uh-huh. Which, Justin, you were there when I learned all of this.
Uh-huh.
I learned that in the freshman play in the year 2012 when I was a freshman in high school. Undercover freshman, the freshman play of 2012.
I'm just gonna say that I think saying that in any of those countries would be very suspicious, specifically if that's the only thing you can say.
Well, that's the thing. They were like, why do you know how to say that? And I was like, in case it comes up, in case like I need to know.
Need to protect myself.
Yeah, je ne parle pas français. Je ne sais pas si espion.
I thought you were gonna say like what station is ESPN is what I thought you were saying.
No. Yeah. Justin, I know we already plugged the Patreon, but I'll do it again. If you're interested in supporting us on Patreon, you can support us at patreon.com/hitboxpod. Become a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jane Old, GKS, and Josh Durham. This week we talked like 45 minutes about weddings and proposals and how it went down with me and all that, which is very fun. If you can't support us there, that's fine. You can follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod. You can rate this episode, your podcast player of choice. You can join our Discord server. Justin, I'm doing this a little out of order. I apologize. It's because we got thrown off by the whole
how dare you
thing. But here's a preview of what's coming up in the news. Sony closes Firewalk Studios and Sunsets Concord officially. Nintendo announces an exciting port, and Marvel's Wolverine gets a studio shakeup. We're going to talk about those things and more. But before we get to all that, Justin, do you want to join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Yeah, let's go. Did we do the intro?
It's Hitbox!
Metacritic
I knew I was forgetting something. I knew it was like off.
I was going off. I had a moment. Yeah. I'm like scrolling in the doc. I was like, we did something.
It's because I really was just like off kilter because we did the bonus episode first, and then we kind of talked about game stuff.
Yeah.
And then whoops.
Yeah.
Because usually also it like usually I have something to say at the beginning and then we do the intro and then I ask you how you're doing. I think I opened by asking you how you're doing.
Oh yeah, you asked me how I'm doing.
So yeah.
Love is love.
Love is love.
Love is love.
And that's so important on a day like today, which is election day. So like go out and vote. And I know by the time you're hearing this, you're gonna know like it's that it's all fine and that it all worked out and all that.
I actually doubt we'll know by hitbox day.
Oh, really? You think so?
Yeah, I think a lot of these mail-in ballot stuff, it'll really depend on some of the states, but I would assume they're going to be so close that they're going to have to wait for a lot of these mail-in ballot results to come in. So,
oh, good. Yeah, let's draw this out.
I mean, really just like nice and slow. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So go vote.
Oh, my.
If you haven't voted yet.
So I was.
I'm not. Yeah, go ahead.
I was hanging out with my mom the other day, and we were just talking and she's like, yeah, so your dad and I turned in our ballots. We did mail-in ballots and we turned them in. And I was like, great, great, great. And then I was like 10 minutes later in the conversation, I was like, what, you two voted? And they're like, yeah. And just to be clear, my parents haven't voted since 1980 when Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan, when Reagan won that election, they were waiting in line to vote. And Carter like pulled out of the election at that point. My mom's like, well, our votes don't matter. Why should we vote? So she hasn't voted since. But she voted and they re-registered and they voted this year. So I'm so proud of them for doing that.
That's great.
I'm so proud of them for doing that. So everyone, your votes do matter. And I kept telling my freshmen, like, even if we live in a blue state, like that generally
it does matter.
It generally, like, if it's going to be like, you know, oh, well, usually in Illinois, the blue candidate wins. It doesn't mean you shouldn't vote, because if enough of you say that, then who knows what's actually going to happen with the election. And it's also the down ballot votes that are just important. And we fought for the right to vote.
Yeah. You're so right, though, too, about like, does it matter to that? That I voted for Vice President Kamala Harris. No, not really. Like in the grand scheme of thing, no, she's going to win this state, most likely. But I voted for other stuff on the ballot too. Like, and that, in my opinion, is actually the more important stuff, because that is when, like, that's not on the national stage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so that does actually start to come into play. But,
well, and I know this is the Metacritic Roundup, and we're talking about the election now, but this is where, like, we're looking at the polls,
right? Yeah.
We're rounding up the polls, but in a moment that was truly heartwarming, during Halloween, we took our Harris Wall sign down from the front of our house because we didn't want to be like a target, an egg or anything like that. We didn't want people you know, whatever. But we didn't put it back up immediately just because time and like forget. And
yeah, I know how it goes.
This weekend, someone was driving by, stopped their car, and walked up to the front door. And we looked on the Ring camera, and he looked a little angry. And I was like, oh, God. So I opened the door, and he's like, I noticed your Harris sign was gone. And I was like, we took it down for trick-or-treaters. Like, he's like, oh, I thought someone stole it because people have been going around and doing that. And he said, I got a bunch of extra ones. I wanted to give you guys an extra one.
And I was like, that's nice.
Holy moly. This is one of our neighbors. Like, doesn't that just warm your heart? Like, for a good neighborly knock.
I'm trying to have hope.
Yeah.
In my life, in all places in my life, I'm trying to have hope. And I'm trying to believe in the good of people. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And like, you know, not to make this too about all this, but like, that's the thing that I've been just trying to hold on to, that it's actually going to be okay. You know what I mean? And that, because I think we just see like the worst people, right? Like platformed on Twitter, especially, right? Like I got to get off Twitter. I think like,
it's been great, man. Sucks. It's been great.
It just is terrible.
And I feel light, and free.
Yeah. Cause you, like, I think being on like platforms like this, it makes you think that that's how most people are. You know what I mean? And it's not. And even if it is, you know, a vocal minority, still like 10,000 people feels big, and it is big.
Yeah.
But like in the grand scheme, it's not, you know?
Yeah.
So it's going to be fine. It's going to be, in fact, it's not even going to be fine. It's going to be good. And it's going to be good. Have to believe in hope for the future. Cause if I don't, I'll spiral into death. I did. I didn't know like the extent of what I was allowed to say at work, but I did post in our Slack and the video channel, like, hey, because I'm, you know, like the video lead. So like, I didn't know, like, I can't tell people, hey, you have to, you should go vote for this person. I don't think the, I don't know how it works, but
probably not. But anyway,
I did. I was like, hey, go vote. And like, you know, I didn't say this, but I'm like, I think it's clear who to vote for. I think it's clear. Anyway. Here's what's in the Metacritic roundup. First thing, Mario and Luigi Brothership. Scored an 80 on the Nintendo Switch. This is the newest in... Damn, that's some fucking whiplash, dude. This is the newest game. We're talking about video games and about... And I love games, and they make me feel good, and they're a wonderful place to escape to.
Mm-hmm.
And to find hope. Play mm-hmm. Metaphor. A lot of hope stuff in there. Anyway... Mario & Luigi Brothership, this is the latest in the Mario & Luigi franchise, which has been dormant for like 9 or 10 years or something like that. I think the last game was on the 3DS. Scored 80 on the Switch. Justin, what do you think about this?
Gotta be honest, from the very beginning, I wasn't super excited about this game one way or another. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have any specific love for the Brothership series. Not Brothership, the Mario & Luigi series. This is the Brothership colon... Mario Luigi, what I know, no love for this. And then I still haven't beaten the Thousand Year Door, but I felt like that game, to me, one of the things that really drew me off of that game from continuing it was just kind of like some of the repetitive nature of the tasks.
Yes.
And the game itself was exceptionally linear to a point that I was a little shocked at how linear it was for an RPG game. So hearing this coming out and hearing it has some of the similar issues, fun battle system, repetitive, that kind of thing. I just don't know if that's what I want to play. But like, what a fucking good year for people in RPGs. There is an RPG for you this year. And I definitely think this could be someone's. And for it being a new Mario RPG game, not just a remake of Thousand Year Door, if you haven't played Thousand Year Door because you played the old version of it, this might be that game to kind of pick up and try because of that. And it looks like the combat system is pretty interesting. Something about like a plug system, I think, that kind of gives you like these upgrades and modifiers on your attacks and stuff like that. So I don't know. It looks like a good game. I just don't know if this is where I'm going, because with it being such a good year of RPGs, I don't know if I need another one of these.
And it is a the Digital Trends article review, 45 hours. Like, this is not a slouch. This is something substantial, right? I agree. I also don't have like any like great love for this series. I know my older brother really likes I think Inside Story, where they get like swallowed by Bowser, which, and there's like a lot of like there's like a lot of like silly like Magic School Bus-esque things to that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is cute. So I was not really like, this wasn't really on my radar. And how it always goes is I read a lot of reviews, but the person who I align myself most is Gio from Digital Trends. Give it a 5 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Let me read you the closing remarks on his review here. I wouldn't label Mario & Luigi Brothership as a bad game, but what's cruelly ironic is that it's a middle of the road effort that's sure to sow the very division its story aims to combat. Some fans will love it, praising its cheery visuals and deep combat system. Others will hate it, feeling like it's another part of a long series downslide. The overly simplistic score I've put on this review will inevitably end up in a social media thread aggregating reviews, and the comments will be filled with people personally insulting me or this publication before playing the game themselves or even reading this critique. Rather than talking to one another and trading our perspectives in good faith, bitter arguments will flare up across technology that once united us but now incentivizes people to become the most bitter, isolated versions of themselves. Mario and Luigi Brothership has a vital lesson to teach us about staying connected to one another and welcoming our differences. I just fear that neither its overtly enthusiastic defenders or most jaded haters will get the message when there's so much other stuff in the way.
Very well put. I actually looked at his review. I didn't read that part specifically, but as one of the lower reviews, because One of the first, I just generally watch some of the IGN reviews. They pop up, the video reviews when they pop up on my YouTube thing. And they gave it, I think, a 5 or 6 out of 10. Excuse me for not knowing this off the top of my head, but it was a lower score. And the comments were all like just ragging on IGN for being like, oh, they don't know what they're talking about, corporate, whatever.
Yeah, they gave it a 5. Wow.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff. And then someone mentioned Geo's review, so then I read his through it. And like, I think there is like, this is what these reviewers thought the game was. I'm pretty sure the IGN reviewer wasn't just like, well, IGN is going to like take the stance against it and everything like that. I mean, the scores of this game are diverse. They're all over the place.
Yes.
And for Geo's cons, he says sluggish pacing, poor performance, writing is devoid of wit and overloaded with gimmicks. Like, I think those are fair criticisms. In addition to that, this goes beyond the fact that when you're looking at a 5-star system versus a 10-point system, I don't think those translate necessarily nicely with each other. 2.5 stars doesn't always feel like it's the same thing as a 5 out of 10 to me personally. But that's just like one of the ideas that a score is only part of the story. You got to read the reviews to understand what people are saying about it.
Yeah. And I think like him saying like, I'm not saying it's a bad game.
Right.
It's not a bad game. It's just like, it didn't come together for me. And also he talks about like having replayed Paper Mario 1000 Year Door and how he's like he basically says like I played it when I was younger and I loved it, but I can't remember why. And like in playing it, I was like, oh, this is why. And those elements are just not in this new one. And he's like, so like and similarly, like the Super Mario RPG remake, like also had this like spark to it that this just doesn't have for him. I mean, like, that's fine. And you can still like it without having to like, you know, like completely hate the game. I don't know. Like, I think like that end bit was very well put, and also like does not try to invalidate like people who did like it. You know what I mean? Like the gamer gave it a 9 out of 10, like, and that's perfectly fine. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Is it the space gamer or the gamer?
No, it is not the gamer. No space.
Okay. Got it. Just checking.
Yeah, but I'm not going to play this, but I also wasn't going to. You know what I mean? Like, this was not going to be a game that I think I really was going to seek out.
I mean, even if this game was like a 10 out of 10, like, which, good luck, I don't think this would have been a game that I would have played this year, considering the other games that I'm interested in that are already out that I have in my backlog.
100% agree, right? Next up is a game called Slitterhead. Justin, are you familiar with Slitterhead?
Yeah, it's by the original Silent Hill creator, correct?
Yes. I don't remember who specifically, but it is some of that original Silent Hill team. Some of the original that core Silent Hill team. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people like talk about like Akira Yamaoka, the guy who did all the music for it, and like they'll be like, oh my gosh, you know, we have original Silent Hill team members. I'm like, you do, but like, you know. You know what I mean? Like the guy doing the music and the guy like coming up with the story. Very different. Slitterhead, though, scored a 67 Kichiro, on the PC.
His name is Kichiro Toyama.
Scored a 67 on the PC, a 67 on the Xbox Series X, a 61 on the PS5, and is unscored on the PS4. Let me just hit you with this. Oof.
Oof.
Oof. It's not great. Do you know anything about this game? Other than sort of the people behind it?
I heard someone loosely connect it to like a game where you just kind of control random characters and like more or less similar to what game does that?
Watch Dogs Legion?
Yeah, Watch Dogs Legion, similar to that is what I've heard some comparisons to.
Yeah, so you play basically as a ghost trying to solve a murder, a ghost detective.
All right.
Very similar to Ghost Soul Suspect.
Yeah.
You play as a ghost who's trying to get to the bottom of some murders in China, and basically you jump into the bodies of the people around you to solve puzzles and hunt down these monsters called Slitterheads, which are like these monsters that impersonate people and they like walk around like masquerading as human beings, and then like when they're revealed, they like are these horrible like body horror monsters. And when you are inhabiting the bodies of these people, they can use these like blood attacks where they like form their blood into like Wolverine claws or like a sword or like a shotgun or something like that. And the game takes place over the course of 3 days, and you are sort of like revisiting each those 3 days from different perspectives of people to try and like solve the murder. Now, I really appreciated in the IGN review, the guy said, like, that sounds way cooler than it is.
You made, like, you sold me. You sold me on that with that. It's like a Majora's Mask.
I was like, yeah. Because I love the idea of, like, I love, like, media, like, movies or whatever that, like, revisit the same timeline from someone else's perspective.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I love that stuff. And he's like, it's boring. It's not interesting. The combat sucks. It visually doesn't look great.
It looks ugly.
The story is not very good.
It looks like a shitty Dead Rising game. Like, old.
People like talk about like, people are like, oh, this is like an Xbox 360. This like game would have killed on the Xbox 360. Like, people like to say that sort of stuff. To me, this is a game that looks like it would have been really at place on the Xbox One at launch. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know. There's something about like the combat going that I'm like, yeah, like it really looks like just mashy and repetitive in a way that is like just not interesting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You said Xbox One. It looks like an Xbox 360 launch game. I mean, these characters,
it doesn't look great.
These
but
character
yeah.
models are barf worthy.
They're quite bad. But yeah, this was interesting to me because of the people behind it and because the concept is interesting.
Yeah.
But like hearing more about it and reading reviews, I'm like, yeah, no thanks. The enemy variety is apparently really limited. There's like three different enemy types, and one of them, they mentioned this in the review, fully looks like an uncircumcised dick.
Oh,
just like nothing to say about it other than just like, is that what you were going for? Because if you were, A+,
you've done it,
but why? but also, why have you done this?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is not a game that was on my radar. I kind of did not think it was going to be incredible, given the fact that no one had been talking about it and there wasn't much sort of like marketing behind it. But I think this is a skip from me. What do you think?
Oh yeah, it's a definitely must play game of the year candidate contender for me. Yeah. I think yeah.
It's just such a shame because like the concept is cool.
Yeah, which is kind of cool, but like. I mean, I'm even looking at some
execution.
Combat now for it. It just looks a lot like pretty clunky
smash.
Not great.
So that's a shame. Because it was sort of like similar vibes of like Ghostwire Tokyo, which is like also didn't really land for me. But that idea of like you are trying to like there's a ghost that's trying to solve a crime.
You're a good
trying
ghost.
To solve a mystery. Yeah. And like you're trying to solve a mystery by like, you know, having to fight off demons and stuff like that. Like, sort of in an Eastern Asia country that is just not that familiar to me. Like, that sounds interesting. But no thanks. Sorry, Slaughterhead. Better luck next time.
Yeah, next time. Your next Silent Hill remake game.
Final game in the Metacritic Roundup is Dragon Age the Veil Guard.
Didn't we talk about this last week?
Did we talk about it last week?
We might have.
When did this? We definitely did.
Yeah,
we absolutely did.
It's cool. It's a good game,
dude. It's been a whole week for me, man. It's been a lot of stuff. Do you have any more interest in this game?
in Veil Guard?
I've seen a lot of stuff about it. Yeah, a friend of mine, his name's Jake Steinberg. He's a YouTuber, content creator, streamer guy. I hopped in one of his streams and asked him like. Is this a must play in the way that Baldur's Gate 3 was a must play even for people who were like not necessarily like interested in it? And he said like, no, it's great. It's a good time. But like, get this on sale in February when there's a slow period. I was like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
I won't because I'm just, I don't know how it worked for me. But
yeah, I can confidently say it's not a Baldur's Gate must play. But I can say it is a fan of BioWare. Must play game because Peter, I bought this game.
You did you really?
I did really. Yeah.
Did you start it?
I have played it.
Well, tell me all about it.
Okay, so the game starts off with what everyone is saying is one of the best character creators ever. It's one of those fun character creators. But can I tell you something? Fuck character creators. Fuck.
Yeah, I know you don't like them.
Character creators.
yeah.
So, like, to the very beginning of this, they you have four different races that you can choose from. You have the Corrin, whatever, which are these big, like, hulking demon things with horns.
Okay.
You have elves, you have humans, and you have dwarves. So you have those three to choose from, and each of four. You have those four to choose from, and each of the four has four pre-made characters to them. And quite frankly, all four of the pre-made characters are generic as fuck.
Okay.
And I'm going to, like, pull back to a second here to Mass Effect, because Mass Effect, you have your Shepard. You have male Shep and femme Shep that you can choose from. Those are the characters for Shepard. And then if you would like to create a monstrosity, you have that option to create a monstrosity. Right?
Okay, yeah.
Like, when you played Mass Effect, did you make your own character?
I did.
You did. I just kept the basic standard Shepard, because in those games, regardless of, like, who you're playing, those shepherds had, like, a very distinct kind of personality to them, and I kind of like having that catered personality. In this game, you start off with this character creator when you're creating this custom character, and when you're creating a custom character, you are led to believe that you are going to be playing a custom character where your choices are unique and interesting. So when I was playing Baldur's Gate, I really... like, thought the character creator was something that was at least kind of fun to play with, because you were doing D&D. You're creating your D&D character. So this game, they set up this whole idea about you creating your D&D character, and then you start playing the game, and your main character, Rook, is unfortunately not a customizable character. And what I mean by that is the Rook is... this is your Rook character. This is how he talks. This is how he acts. And there's not, like, the unique... dialogue that you can choose for your Rook character. There's not, like, a unique personality that you can give your Rook character. He is a character that is there, that has its own personality and his own opinions, but it's not necessarily something that feels like I am playing an RPG. It feels like you are playing the character of Rook that you can make look like whatever you want and have some slight options. Does that kind of make sense?
That's exactly like Mass Effect was the same way.
Right, exactly. Like Mass Effect. You're right. Yeah, it's kind of like that with Mass Effect. So the difference is you can be a piece of shit Shepard, or you can be a do-gooder Shepard.
Yeah.
And you have, like, very distinct choices. This one's, and again, I'm like 6-7 hours in, so I'm not super far into the game. This one, every option you have, like, the encouraging thing. It's, like, done with, like, a thumbs up. You have the Joker response, which is done, like, kind of not taking things seriously. And then you have the Stern response. And none of them feel like, when I am going about creating my character and saving the world, you are really creating that good or evil type of persona. I'm not really creating a persona. I'm just giving a different flavor of how this character would react to that stuff. And all the reactions generally seem similar to each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily feel like you're adding to making, like, I get there's problems with the Paragon system, obviously, but there's nothing that feels like I am customizing what my Rook is like. This is kind of what Rook is like. He's a good guy. But what is the slight different flavor of that good guy that you're making is kind of what you get. And while I don't mind a game like this, I fucking love God of War 2018. I love God of War Ragnarok. When you have this character creator at the very beginning that is, like, throwing at you, let's customize your character, or you choose one of these, like, 16 generic ass characters, it feels like there's this, like, disconnect between the character creator and then what actually happens, if that makes sense in the actual game. And then plus, I think the character creator, like, I have a lot of problems sometimes with these, because they say you can make the character you want, but because specifically the art style of this game, nothing you make actually looks like a character that you want it to look like. In Dragon Age Inquisition, I made Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones as, like, my main character. And there's actually an aspect when you're starting the game that you can create your Inquisitor from that game. So I tried to recreate her, and nothing looked right when I made her.
Yeah.
And it just felt like they had this, like, idea of creativity with it, but, like, you're spending, like, an hour setting up the game before you even start the game, And I right. didn't feel like it was necessarily the best, most engaging way for me to start with it. And I understand, like, later on in the game, you can go back and change what your look is if you want to make it seem more realistic. You can't change your race or your, like, class options, but you can change what your sliders are
your
on
faces,
it.
Your
faces, yeah. Which I think is a nice thing. But I don't know. I just really have sometimes when you're playing a game like this, to start off with a character creator is always like the thing I don't quite care about to start. And it just pulls me back yeah. a little bit to the point when I every time I see these, I just want to like click through. But at the same time, I'm about to play 60-hour RPG. I don't want to just play with this random monstrosity character.
Yeah.
So that's my initial impression of the character creator thing. The game itself, as I said, is pretty linear in terms of like your options as a character. You don't feel special as your main character. You are basically hired from the crew of some of the crew from the Inquisition game to basically stop the antagonist from Inquisition from destroying the world and opening a rift that's going to allow demons to come into the world. But it doesn't feel like you're special. And I know that's not necessarily the point for all video games. In Inquisition, you start off by getting this special power to basically close rifts, and it makes your character feel like you have some weight or importance in this world. In this game, you basically get this mental connection with the villain from the other game through just kind of like random happenstance, and it still doesn't make you feel like you are unique or different or special in any way. That it just kind of feels like you're this character who is given all this power and leadership in your group without actually earning it. Specifically knowing that a lot of these characters you're dealing with are characters from Inquisition. So it's a weird start to the story because for the first 5 hours, you don't really feel like you understand. Like if you haven't played Inquisition, it's hard for you to get your feet wet with what is happening.
Okay.
However, over that time, you do a couple of general missions, a couple general things. It slowly starts to get a more direct story with what you have to do and how you have to stop these things that have come out of these rifts that the bad guy opened up and stuff like that. It starts to gain more direction, specifically as you start to assemble your party and you get to know these people in the world a little bit better. But it's a very slow start. And I think that that story-wise is enough to turn a lot of people away from the very beginning. And I would even say the characters that you meet at the very beginning, they don't really set them up in like a cool or unique way to make them seem like, oh, these characters are some badasses that I want to be with. They kind of just like give you companions without establishing why they're cool or why you should like them.
Yeah. So it sounds like for me, having not played Inquisition, and someone who like lately when a game is slow,
yep,
I've been fucking feeling it. It might be because Metaphor like drained all of that out of me, like my ability to just like put up with like a slow pace, which I have not played much, but I also haven't been home. But like to me hearing that, I'm like, okay, then I don't need to play this. Like I'm good.
So yes, story wise, the engagement in the story takes a little bit, but combat wise, it's actually pretty fucking fun. So basically, you have a couple classes. You have three general classes to start from at the beginning. You have your fighter, you have your mage, and you have your rogue. And each one of them has, like, through their skill trees, eventually you can get to a specialization that gives you some specific powers to, like, kind of change the version that you're playing. So you might say there's 9 total versions or 9 total character classes based on those three beginning ones that you can do. And the cool thing about the upgrade system is that they allow you to respec at any time, which I think is like the way to play these modern RPGs.
I always appreciate that.
Just because like, why do you have a penalty? Why do I have to find this upgrade thing to respec? I want to find out like the character I want to play. Is this really the way I want to go? I don't want to be locked into something in hour 5 that by hour 60 I have to stick with. You cannot change your class though. So if you're stuck as the mage through the whole game.
Okay.
So that's one
of
those.
I can get more down on that,
right?
Though.
Which makes sense to a certain degree. I wish they did something where you could, like, after the tutorial mission, try another class to see if you like it better or something like that. Mm-hmm. But even then, it wouldn't be a very accurate thing because you don't start to really unlock the different powers that make the classes unique until later on in the process. But basically, the combat system—it's an action RPG, much more similar to like a God of War. I think God of War is like if you're thinking about the combat of God of War, I think you'll kind of understand what a lot of this combat is like, feeling like.
Okay.
You have your basic dodge, you have your strong attack, you have your basic attack, and then you have the wheel. When you press R1, it opens up a wheel with like your specialized attacks that you can use that you can kind of customize based on like where your upgrades are, or what you want to focus on in a certain battle. In addition, when you open up that wheel, you can also control the powers of your companions. You get like two companions and they have like three powers, and they're actually quite useful. They act more as armor rather than actual characters. And what I mean by that is like, you don't have to worry about them dying. They don't die. I don't think they take damage. They don't do anything like that, but they essentially give you extra powers to work with in the map. Like one of the characters has like a buff that makes your attack stronger for a certain amount of time, or a potion that will give you strong health regen for a period of time, or a special like bomb, like magic bomb ability that you can like shoot out. And basically you have the one timer for that character, and you have to choose which one of those three skills to use. And it pauses the game so you can either select what character or enemy to attack with it or anything like that. So it kind of like at the same time, you're dealing with a party of three, but the party is not like you're controlling them individually in combat or anything like that. They are just giving your character new skills. And they're actually quite useful skills to use throughout the game so far that I found. And it makes it kind of fun to like change companions at this point, because it's like, all right, what are the basic buffs that I want my character to have with this? Do I need more damage? Do I need more defensive? What's the kind of like thing that's going to help me the most? You also have some loose control about who they should be targeting. Are they being defensive? Are they attacking? Are they all attacking the same target? Are you having that character attack that character? But again, their attacks are kind of minimal in terms of their effectiveness. They just kind of draw attention to the other characters as well. There's also a parry system involved, a dodging system involved, and it is, you know, when everything is singing together, it is a very engaging combat style, and I really enjoy it so far.
So at risk of being, like, reductive, though, it does sound, with the companions at the very least, it does sound, like, very Mass Effect-y.
Yes.
Where yes. Like, you are not controlling them individually, like... It's a lot more of like you have the abilities that they have.
It's pretty Mass Effect
3. The suggestion of
Mass Effect 3 in its powers and stuff like that. And like again, that's a fun combat system. I was a little scared of it because I really enjoyed the Inquisition combat system that allowed you to control any of your team that you wanted to. It allowed you to kind of pull up in an RTS mode and like dictate like where your characters were attacking in a much more strategical level. This one is not about that kind of strategy. It's basically like a, you know, action hack and slash kind of thing that you're doing with your different abilities and stuff like that, but it's not what they're going for. And while this game is technically, the sequel to it, it feels separate enough and it feels like its own thing that I'm not like upset that it's not the actual combat of Inquisition the way I thought, hoped it would be initially. It's just a fast paced combat system. And I think the strength of this game so far is the combat. As I've been hearing people talk about it and reading reviews about it, there's this bell curve sort of, or I guess, I don't know the bell curve, but there's this point where the story picks up and the characters pick up, but the combat gets a little repetitive and a little bit simple. So I'm assuming there's going to be that like middle point where the story is more engaging and driving me through while the combat is a little bit samey. People have suggested, from Greg Miller to several reviews I've read and videos I've watched, they've suggested to make it put on a harder difficulty when it gets a little bit easier, just because it makes the combat, you know, a little bit more like thought-provoking as you're going through it and everything like that. And it is a BioWare game. You have a couple choices that you have to make throughout the game, such as one of the early things is there's this town that has been infected by this blight. And you're kind of going through and like seeing all like the friends of your companions dead, and you're destroying the blight, destroying these creatures, and you basically get to the mayor of the town. And the mayor of the town's like surrounded by this blight kind of thing. And basically you find out that this mayor made a pact with the god to save himself in order to sacrifice his town, basically. And then you have a choice. Do you want to save the mayor or leave him to the wolves, essentially? And there's not like a good or bad option to it, obviously. like, this guy was a piece of shit and, like, sold out his town. Should you save him or should you, like, just leave him, which seems inherently evil, but also this guy is inherently evil. What is the choice going to be? And then you have two companions who are kind of fighting back and forth. I sided with the companion who had an actually compelling reason, other than one of the companions was like, but you, that's not a nice thing to do. And the other one is like, they fucking killed my friends. They destroyed what I know. Kill this guy. And I was like, okay, fine. You're right. That was a bad move on his part. I'll leave him here. So they have those kind of choices. And the change to this game that other ones don't have, are you one of those people when you're playing a game, you want to get the right result?
Depends on a lot of things. Usually I want, if I'm playing a game that is not actually about player choice, I want to get the result that the game wants me to get. But I want to feel like I came to that conclusion myself.
Without the game like telling you to do it. Well, what this game does is sometimes you like make a choice and then they'll say something like that's really like not what you intended. And then it ends up like, wait, no, that's not what I wanted to do.
Yeah. This one, because it doesn't, as you were saying before, it didn't tell you exactly what your character is going to say. It does that like Fallout 4 thing where it's just like. Hesitant.
They give you the direction, yeah. And then what they say is a little bit different. And sometimes it doesn't fit with what you thought it was. Very Mass Effect BioWare kind of like problem that they have. But this one, every major decision in the game, they make a save automatically.
Oh, cool.
And this game literally like kills you with the amount of like auto saves it does at all these decisions. And it'll even label them like what that decision was. So you know that if you want to like change what the mayor did, you can go back to that save and change your decision. Granted, you'll have to replay the game up until you see where the ramifications of that decision are, but you still have the option to kind of go back and note that, oh shit, this was an important decision that I didn't realize was an important decision. They made a save for you. So it feels really easy to kind of go back and make those changes. So I really appreciate that aspect of the RPG that you're kind of going through. So far, I can't really tell you if I love these characters yet. One of the characters from the original game that I forget if they were one of your companions or just an NPC. They're one of your companions in this game. And basically something happens to them to give them magical powers that they didn't have before. So it kind of adds a wrinkle to their story, too. So it makes them interesting and everything like that. So from a like 1,000-yard view here. If you like BioWare games, like good BioWare games, you're going to like a lot of what you're seeing in this game. If you like Dragon Age, you're going to like a lot of what you're seeing in this game. If you don't like BioWare games, I think if you are liking action games like a God of War, I think you will like this game. If you never played Dragon Age before, be prepared to be a little confused at the very beginning. And as someone who has platinumed and played Dragon Age Inquisition as much as I have, I am still kind of confused on some of the stuff. But I think that's pretty par for the course for a lot of these games. Like watch what happened in Inquisition, watch a video or something to get you caught up on YouTube. I mean, how many games have you played before that you still needed some context before you started it? Because you're like going in the middle of the series. So I don't think that's the worst piece of advice to do, but it is a little slow to get started with the story, in my opinion. But overall, I'm really digging it. It's scratching that brain itch that I like in the video game. And it kind of came down to me between Metaphor and Veilguard. I knew I would play this game no matter what. Metaphor is still one of those questions that, am I going to be playing this game or not? And the fact that I'm like, well, if I know I'm going to play Veilguard, why don't I just play it first?
Sure. So that's the question then too, but like, are you still on the Metaphor train?
So
you bought it, didn't you?
No, I didn't buy it yet.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay.
So the way the demo works is they basically give you to that the first dungeon. We basically have 10 days to do the dungeon.
Yeah.
And then they give you 3 days in the demo. When I initially beat the demo, I went through and did a couple of the general tasks and stuff like that. And what I did the first day was I went around the town. I talked to every possible person I could to see what my options were. And then I kind of plotted out what the best path would be for me. The thing I liked about this, and I think it's the thing you were saying, there were choices, but there weren't that many to a place where it was overwhelming for me to decide what to do. I was really able to funnel into these are the things that I want to do. These are the 10 options I have. What are the best 3 things to do in these 3 days? So I kind of like took the time to do that. It still was a very like active process to my brain, which sometimes I don't like with RPGs. So I did for 2 days. I did all these like side things, got to know the world a little bit and everything like that. And then I'm like, I'm going to get as far as I fucking can in this dungeon at the end here.
Good luck.
And I got pretty far in it. I like got really far in it, and I was like spamming like health potions and stuff like that at a certain point. And then I got to the point where I realized I was significantly underleveled for what they wanted me to do. Like, not underleveled,
yeah,
but I needed to grind a little bit more. I needed to actually heal. I needed to like get some more weapons and armor and stuff like that out of the dungeon. And that's where I kind of ended it. I basically got to like the halfway through all of the zombie section of the catacomb dungeon part when the zombies start coming up and did that kind of thing. And I probably played it another 3 hours as I was going through all that stuff further than what I did before. And while I started to really have the combat sing to me and stuff like that, part of it, I was like, this still feels like a lot of mental tax, not even playing the game, but the shuffling of all the systems to me that I'm like, I'm not out of this game because I'm quite intrigued by the story. It was one of those things where like, I think I've gotten my 8 hours in this game. I think I know what I'm doing in this game. I think I've given it a shot enough that if we're talking about, if I don't get to play this game by the end of the year, I think we can have an informed decision for game of the year to talk about this, if it's on your list or not like that. But then I'm like, Veilguard is really speaking to me. So why don't I play that game first, beat it, and then see where I am at the end of the year to go back to Metaphor. And it's not something like I don't think I'm going to come back to Metaphor. It's just kind of like when I come back to it, which I think is a victory for it. I sent you earlier in the week the Advantage battle song in the game. But Jesus Christ, I don't know what that man is saying.
Wait, hold on a second. Maybe is that culturally insensitive?
I mean,
I don't know.
That's the way the song is. I mean,
Okay. Anyway, go on.
So
if it is, I apologize. I'll never do that again.
You sent the song to me. I don't know what that man is saying, but like it gets you fucking pumped and hyped. So a couple days this week, I was like a little tired driving to work. You know what I did? I just put on that music and I'm like, Oh yeah. I got myself pumped and ready to go. So like, I think there's a lot of good things about that game that are like making me want to play it. And if Veilguard wasn't out, I would have bought that game. But yeah, I would say ultimately for you going back to Veilguard, I don't know if it's a can't miss game, but it's a BioWare game. And I mean, it's good BioWare. So you know what to expect with a good BioWare game. You were also talking to someone who fucking loves Mass Effect Andromeda. So
yeah,
take that into account as you make your decision about if you should buy this game or not.
I think I'm going to chill on it. I've got a lot of stuff on Game Pass that I want to get to. I want to keep playing Metaphor. Indiana Jones is coming in December, right? Like, I'm going to wait. And I probably won't play it right now. Who knows in the future? But like, I think I'm good on it for the time being. But I'm glad that you're enjoying it, and I'm going to be interested to hear more of your thoughts as you keep playing it and all that. I did play a fair amount of Echoes of Wisdom in my several plane flights that I had this week. That game is such a great example of like good, not great. You know what I mean? We're like I see some of the ideas here. I finished a few of the dungeons now, and like I do like I like the game, but I wish it were better. You know, I see the vision, and I think it could have just taken it further. The thing I think is most frustrating is like I kind of have given up on like the combat now of like summoning things, and I'm just like fucking, I'm just gonna transform into Link because like that's all there is. You know what I mean? It's just easier. Yeah.
That I think in retrospect, that's a really strange option to give you.
One of the best videos on youtube.com right now is from my friend Jake Steinberg, same guy who gave me his Dragon Age recommendation. It's about let me pull up exactly what the title of it is. But basically the video is about like posture and posing as Steinberg. The video is titled Posing as Link: Disappointing Familiarity in Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, and basically it's about like you're playing as Zelda, But why is it Zelda? There's nothing in this game that is like the Zelda that we know. So why even have her be Zelda? Especially because she's at her most powerful when she is Link. You know what I mean? So why not just make you Link?
Mm-hmm.
She's a silent protagonist, which is unlike Zelda that we've seen. She's not dressed like Zelda. Her powers are not like anything we've ever seen from Zelda before. I think it's a shame because it's a good game. It's fun enough, but it's not like I just wish it were better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it goes.
Totally makes sense. I do like the game a lot. I have been playing it loosely, not like I haven't really like put a couple hours into it in a sitting since my plane ride earlier in the month. But I like it. I know it's simplistic a lot of the times in terms of his puzzles, which basically just means like, you know, pop a bed or pop this big level 3 monster and you're fine. But I still like the nonstop small doses of me feeling like I'm smart, even if the game is like obvious, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
I find this game is much more appealing to me than any of the other top-down Zelda games that I've played because it feels like I'm doing more actively with my brain than just walking around solving puzzles and dungeons and hitting people with my stick. Even though you are walking around solving puzzles with beds, hitting people with your summons, essentially. I mean, it's like the same thing.
Yes.
But it's like the coding of it just appeals to me a little bit more than most of these games. And I do like how it's open enough that even if there's obvious answers, you can solve puzzles various ways with what you have.
100%.
So, but I totally understand like what you mean by it's a good, not great game, because I don't think there's a single top-down Zelda game that I would think is a great game to me personally. I know people are like, you don't like the Super Nintendo Zelda, whatever that one is. No, I fucking don't. Some of those bosses are fucking ridiculous and they are not fun to play. And if you don't have save states with them, it's really impossible to want to play that game. So I do not think that's a 10 out of 10 game. Maybe it was back in the day, but like today's standards, it's not to me. Link's Awakening, fun game, not a perfect game, not a 10 out of 10 game for me. But this one is something I would recommend more enthusiastically than any of those other games. If that makes sense.
It's not bad by any means. I'm going to see if I can't finish it. I've got a lot of other, I've got a lot of other stuff to play and like we were just saying, like, I don't know if I want to make time exactly for this game because it's not something that it's like I have to sit down and play it again, but it is certainly enjoyable.
Oh, by the way, remember Prince of Persia game I bought for $20 on Amazon? I just saw that it was $15 on Amazon, so wait tough. A little bit longer, Peter. It'll be $10, I'm sure.
that's tough. Sorry. Justin, you want to talk about the news?
Let's do it.
The big thing here. Sony Interactive Entertainment has closed Firewalk Studios. Creators of Concord have officially sunset the game and closed another studio called Neon Koi, which is another studio that they own. Oh man, where to begin? So they announced this in a PlayStation blog post on the SIE blog, in a post from Herman Holst. It's an internal email from Herman Holst, it's uncomfortable to think about and to hear. Before we get into the specifics of all of that, Justin, I just want to hear, like, generally, what do you think of this?
I'm not shocked. I'm a little bit saddened by it. And I think this is a weird situation for me because I can't necessarily remember a situation quite like this before in terms of Firewalk aside, the game Concord that they worked on for as long as they did, spent as much money on the game as they did. It came out and then it was gone and then the studio was gone and it's just done.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, a lot of things happen. Games will get canceled before they close. Studios will before they ship, and then the studio will get shuttered. A studio will get shuttered, and the project will move to someone else. A game's out for a year and gets pulled. 2 weeks, though, for a game to get pulled after it being something that they invested with it. They literally did that math, and they're like, it makes more sense to just eat the loss, close the studio, cancel the game after it's already out, refund people for the game. Like, that is shocking to me.
I mean, the way, let's see, it's worded very specifically here. To strengthen something about like moving forward, we believe it is in our best interest to close this. It's just, it's a shame. And it's exactly what you're saying. Like, how is it? Is this the best path forward for you guys? You know, especially because so Neon Koi is a mobile studio. Let me read this to you. It says, with this refocused approach, Neon Koi will close and its mobile action game will not be moving forward. I want to express my deepest gratitude to everyone at Neon Koi for their hard work and endless passion to innovate. They were making a live service mobile game unannounced for Sony. Also, Firewalk made a live service game for Sony that got closed down, right? Like, if you are a studio working on a live service game for Sony, like, hey, watch out. I mean, like, so all these projects are gone. The only live service projects that we know about from Sony right now are the Horizon live service game and that game Fair Games. It was a studio that was opened explicitly for making a live service game for Sony. Oh, and Marathon. But then the rest that we've known about have all been shut down, right? So Concord, gone. Spider-Man multiplayer, gone. Last of Us multiplayer, gone. This new Neon Koi thing, gone. So, like, that's four. Concord, gone. That's five, right? And they were doing 12. 5 out of 12, that's crazy. And now there's two left. It, to me, just shows, like, they do not have faith in this and they don't know how to figure out how to launch one of these types of games.
And I think, you know what I mean? Think it's more than just they don't know how to launch it. I think it's just like no one cares about playing these games because there is so much other stuff out there. The word that they got to remember is free. There are so many other free games out there that people can play that are of high quality that they will create, that people will, there's an ecosystem out there of people who want to do this kind of stuff. And the second you attach a game like Concord to any kind of price thing, it is going to be something that is a barrier to them. In addition to the price though, people weren't playing Concord when it was a fucking free beta, which is it the fault of Sony for that? Like in terms of their marketing, I don't think so. I think it says something else industry-wide that is not an issue, but like it's just not like what Sony fans want. It's not what a Sony fan is going to play. How does Sony how does Sony become Sony? How did PlayStation 5 become the top of the market? They're single-player games.
Yeah.
And they had this shift that probably started a few years back of them trying to compete some way with Xbox to try to make their live services and make money that way. It's just not working. And as you said, Fair Games, is that game ever going to come out?
No. No, of course not. Is that studio ever going to release a game?
Right.
No.
Marathon. Is Marathon ever going to be something that Bungie actually releases and is a critical success? They might release
it. Critical success? I think so. Commercially? I don't know.
Right? Like, I just don't know what that's going to be like. And I don't know where it's going to fit in because I'm sorry. Like, Marathon to me does not make me excited and happy. Maybe if you're a Bungie fan, it might. But even then, like, most Bungie fans at this point are Destiny fans. And it's not Destiny. Marathon is not Destiny.
Right. It's an extraction shooter.
Right. And I don't know if that's going to be the thing that brings people back in. And I think one of the most telling things is how Naughty Dog, the dogs of Sony, stopped developing a game they spent a lot of time on that was a multiplayer live service game.
Yeah.
In factions that people were excited for the most part, and that has had a history of success with a studio of success. They pulled back on that. And if they can't do it, why do we think any of these other companies can do it?
Yeah. Right. I mean, like, I think that it is a great, you know, when they announced that they were closing that, when they were done with factions, I think something, maybe it was Neil Druckmann or someone said, like, we were seeing that the path forward for us was going to become a multiplayer studio and we didn't want that.
Yep.
You know, luckily they have the clout within Sony to be able to say, hey, we're not doing this, right? Because they have the history to back it up. Unfortunately, like, these other studios that are being made for this sort of thing don't have that, you know, like, and that's unfortunate. I found the quotation from this announcement, by the way. So regarding Firewalk, as announced in early September, an important update on Concord, certain aspects of Concord were exceptional, but others did not land with enough players, and as a result, we took the game offline. We've spent considerable time these past few months exploring all our options. After much thought, we have determined the best path forward is to permanently sunset the game and close the studio. I want to thank all of Firewalk for their craftsmanship, spirit, creative spirit, and dedication. But, like, yeah, our best path forward is to permanently sunset the game and close the studio. What a fucking shame.
Yep.
I'd also like to point out, I don't have this in front of me. Let's see. Recently, do you remember when people were talking about, like, oh my gosh, the budget for Concord was $400 million?
Yes.
According to Colin Moriarty, that is, it's not true. It's like $200 million, which is pretty much in line with, the rest of Sony Interactive Entertainment stuff. Yeah. So, Ethan Gatch from Kotaku, says that, let's see here, where is it? One of his sources said that it is about $200 million, which again is about what is in line with the rest of, like, Sony's first party stuff. Either way, $200 million is not incredible to lose if you're a company, for on something like Concord, but damn, shut it down, gone.
Insane.
And then I don't know about, like, how all the, like, I don't know if Firewalk stuff impacted Neon Koi. You know, of course I don't know that, but, like, the way this is presented makes it seem like they have just gotten cold feet about all of this live service stuff, right? It's a shame.
Yeah.
Firewalk had its own sort of message here, basically thanking players for basically saying, like, this is what we were able to do, and we really are really proud of the team for being able to make a game. You know, while we changed engines and stuff like that, you know, we've been around since 2018. Like we've done a lot of things that we wanted to do. We took risks and all that sort of stuff, and we shipped a great game, which just unfortunately just didn't land with players particularly well. Yeah, I don't know. I think this sucks, and I think that Sony has a lot of egg on their face from all of this, and I think they want to move on from this as soon as possible. But yeah, it's a shame.
Video games.
Yeah. I think the worst part about it is just, it's like, was the problem Firewalk Studios? I don't think so.
No.
Right? Like it wasn't. It was Sony's push for this stuff was the big problem. So. Damn. Nintendo.
Oh.
They, you sent me a trailer this week.
Through my email, because that's...
You emailed it to me. That's how we were able to communicate while I was in Canada. Xenoblade Chronicles X Definitive Edition is coming out March 20th, 2025. Justin, did you play Xenoblade Chronicles X?
No, it was a game I've always wanted to play, but it was locked on a system that I had no interest in.
Was this the Wii U or the 3DS one?
Wii U.
Gotcha. Yeah, so it's funny. Apparently people have been, like, begging for this port. A tweet here from at not quite here TSM. Nintendo is the funniest company of all time. People have begged for this to be ported for 7 years, and they randomly announce it at 10 a.m. on a random Tuesday.
This is out of nowhere. Out of pocket.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
Random.
At the end of this console's life cycle, they're like, hey, you want this? I'm interested in this a little bit. I really liked Xenoblade Chronicles 3, but you haven't played the other ones. I wonder if I would like the same sort of things out of this. I have to imagine.
No.
I might not.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No.
It's like a mech game, isn't it?
Yeah, this game has nothing to do with the other ones. The story of this game is interesting on its own. Basically, like, this ship crash lands on this planet that needs to leave, but it basically becomes like this like colony on this like dangerous planet. And you basically play someone who goes out and tries to destroy the creatures on the planet and get resources to help strengthen your colony. And eventually, pretty significantly further into the game, you get these huge flying mechs that can start to attack some of the bigger creatures. It is not a game about story. When you're thinking about like Xenoblade, the original ones, what gets me into those games are the stories behind them, right? Like those are interesting and engaging. This one does not have that kind of like interesting and engaging story. You play just like a generic character that you make. The combat's much more like shooty rather than RTS-y. Like you basically have guns that you use and shoot at things that eventually, as you get enough power to upgrade your materials, you can upgrade them to get a mech. So it's a very different experience, much more combat and quest focused, much more MMORPG feeling than I would say what Xenoblade is, which is like this like RPG game. So it's a very different thing in the series. I could understand why maybe they didn't necessarily release it that quickly because it does feel so different from the other games that it's playing off of Xenoblade, and I think people will be upset with what it is. They also tease some other weird connections from past characters from like Xenoblade Chronicles on there and stuff like that. So they have maybe some like references to those other games and stuff like that. It's all probably in the same world of some sort. But the game is not something that I would expect if you like the music and the story and the epicness of the other Xenoblade games. This one's not going to scratch that itch. I do think it was just always something that I was interested in playing and I wanted to play, but it just was on a console that I, again, didn't care for at all.
Yeah, and this is also like, it's just a port, right? It's not like a remake, yeah.
I think they enhanced the visuals, right? And they have some brand new story elements, which I'm assuming would be just like some extra side quests and stuff like that.
Got it. So more of like just a remaster then?
Yeah.
Seems, yeah. Yeah, okay, well then, I mean, that makes sense. I don't know if this is for me then. Sounds like it's probably not. But I'm happy for people because people fucking love this series, right? I mean, people have been like asking for this for a long time. I will say someone also pointed out big year for XCX fans between Charlie and this.
Got me there.
I thought that was kind of funny. Justin, Arkane Austin's founder, or is it just Arkane's founder? Yeah, just Arkane proper, because it was, I think, founded in Montreal and then sent down, then they splintered off into their Austin offices as well. Rafael Colantonio said that he thinks that the decision to shut down Arkane Austin, creators of Redfall, was stupid. Let me just read you this headline here from Games Radar by Ian Harris. Microsoft's decision to close Arkane Austin was, quote, stupid, says founder. Quote, recreating a very special group like that is, I would dare to say, impossible. I'm just going to read you a little bit from this article here. Arkane founder Rafael Colantonio has called Microsoft's decision to shut down the studio he helped create stupid, as recreating a very special group like that is, I would dare to say, impossible. Colantonio helped set up Arkane back in 1999 before it grew into two studios around 7 years later, that being Arkane Leon and Arkane Austin. His time with Arkane came to an end in 2017. However, following the release of the sci-fi immersive sim Prey, following that, the Austin team would go on to release the unsuccessful Redfall in 2023 before being shut down by Microsoft earlier in the year. Colantonio said this, I think if you look a little bit, it's obvious that Arkane Austin was a very special group that made some cool things that could pull it off again, he told PC Gamer. I think it was a decision that just came down to, we need to cut something. Was it to please the investors in the stock market? They're playing a different game. It makes sense, right? And this speaks to sort of our irritation and frustration with Concord and Firewalk Studios, right? This whole thing about just like, why do this? Like, who does this benefit? This does not benefit the studio in the long run because you're losing all of this talent. This does not benefit the industry really at all. This is a very short-sighted way to please investors. I don't think there's a ton to say here other than that, but what do you think, Justin?
I mean, part of it is I could easily just go and say that, yeah, this is part of an issue with like Microsoft to begin with. But like, yeah. I think the bigger issue is that there were issues at the studio and Microsoft didn't do things to address them at the beginning. They just kind of let them go and right. like let them be without intervening. And then eventually once that game came out, a dysfunctional game, Microsoft, instead of trying to fix it, ended up just canceling it.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting hearing from, like, in looking into the development of Redfall, everyone was like, oh my gosh, please cancel this. Once
yeah.
Microsoft takes over, please let this be canceled. Which is right. not, does not, like, instill confidence.
Right. And like, game. I think, like, obviously, this is something that when Microsoft came in, like, it's a weird position to be in for them to come in and look at a studio that's floundering like this. Like, what should they have done? Should they have right. canceled the game then? Would that have been the right option? Because wouldn't people look at that like, oh my God, so Microsoft has come in and canceled this game before they even let it release. They don't want to like do this thing from a marketing perspective of it. But also at the same time, like, can you fix that game? Like, what, like, there, it was kind of like they purchased a lemon. What do you do with it? I don't know. It's just, to me, it's something that I don't think it's necessarily something that Microsoft, like, I understand why Microsoft closed the studio.
Yeah.
But I also understand why Microsoft didn't help the game along. But I also don't know what Microsoft could have done. I mean, the problem was the studio structure and the
yeah.
game sucked.
Well, I also think, I do think that they could have canceled this internally before making that first trailer drop, right? Because we didn't know about this until
I guess
after
that
they
is
bought
true.
It for,
yeah,
for
that
a
is
while.
True. That is true.
So if they came in, canceled it before it was like a whole thing, like, I think that you are saving a lot of face there. You know what I mean? And that is a common thing that studios do, right? Especially during acquisitions. I know we talked about like how that sucks, how it sucks that when you are acquired that like now you're at the whims of new people who have different agendas and whatever. But if you were hoping for the thing to be canceled, you know, then
that's pretty win-win. Telling.
Yeah. Yeah, but I disagree. I think it's foolish though to say, okay, well, we have Arcane Austin. Let's close them down. You have the failures of Redfall were not because of that studio. They were because of parent companies, right? And I think, like, as everyone has already said too, well, in the same breath, they also closed Tango Gameworks. So what the fuck do you actually want? You know, can't have a successful game, can't have a failure. So there's truly no rhyme or reason for it, which is just a shame. Speaking of studios and development and parent companies and all that, the creative director for the upcoming Marvel Wolverine game from Insomniac has left and is now leading Perfect Dark, the game from who's making this? The Coalition?
Yeah, no. Isn't it the Quadruple A studio, best game ever?
Yeah, yeah. And they brought in like something Montreal, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Who is making this game? Perfect Dark.
Crystal Dynamics, right?
Crystal Dynamics is who they brought in. The Initiative is
the
initiative. Name of.
Then Crystal Dynamics yes. is helping them with it.
Yes, that's what it is. Not Square Enix. No, who's the one? Eidos is what I'm thinking about.
Eidos.
Those studios are also tightly associated. Yeah, so this comes from Stephen Totilo from Gamefile for his column. He says that Brian Horton was the creative director for Wolverine, but has left the project and is now the creative director for Perfect Dark. There's not a ton of like solid news here, right? It doesn't seem like it was for any specific reason. You know what I mean? Like I think a lot of people are going to interpret this as, oh man, Wolverine's in trouble. But I think those same, like by that logic, you could also say, oh man, Perfect Dark is in trouble.
Right.
What do you make of this?
I think it's just common that things kind of move around all the time, with these things. I think, it's not I think it's more worrisome for Wolverine to a certain degree than it would be for Perfect Dark. I think Perfect Dark just is, it seems like one of those things that it's a bunch of different studios already and people coming together. It's like a conglomeration of help coming together it. I don't think this necessarily changes my view of that. But in terms of Wolverine, I think Wolverine itself, from what we've seen in the Insomniac leak with it, I think it's still kind of new and fresh with what they're doing with it. When is it supposed to come out? 2026, allegedly?
I thought it was 2025, but it could be wrong. 2025,
whenever it is.
Let me look.
But I trust Insomniac as a company to pull itself together. I don't think Insomniac is one of those companies that's going to start making like weird decisions to like appease investors as of this point, having coming off their commercial successes of Spider-Man and Ratchet and Clank. So I think it's definitely something to note. But again, projects and leads change all the time. I don't think this is something that is necessarily problematic for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, too, like we were even mentioning this before, like Perfect Dark was being sort of reported as like, oh, man, development's in trouble. It's having some issues. And it's like, yeah, but it's like it's a video game. Like that's
right.
That's how it goes. You know what I mean? Like I don't put a lot of stock into that sort of thing until the game is out. You know, We didn't hear a single thing about Redfall. And then that game came out and was what it was, right? Like we didn't hear any of that. So I don't really put a lot of stock into that. And yeah, also like leadership changes, like people move, like, I don't know, maybe this guy got offered, maybe Brian Horton got offered a lot of money to come over to do this. And you know, like an offer you can't refuse, you know what I mean? And hey, I, to be honest with you, don't think either of these games are going to be bad. I think Wolverine, Insomniac as a studio has proven itself, right? Between Spider-Man, between Ratchet, between everything it's done, it has proven itself to be a solid pick for whatever it's whatever sort of project it's going to work on next. And then this Perfect Dark game, it's not as an sort of easy win in my eyes as like whatever Insomniac's working on, but that's just because I think the initiative is a little untested for me personally. However, that gameplay preview we saw of it for Summer Game Fest looked great.
Yeah.
So I don't think that this is some like huge problem in the way that I think a lot of people are going to hear this and sort of try and run with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And even looking at this, the people that are taking over the Ratchet and Clank leads, and that game is great. Like, I don't think like I'm worried about those people kind of taking over for it. And a lot of times the leads are just the kind of people who are taking your studio's teams and like just managing them and like making sure they hold deadlines and stuff like that and having a clear and consistent vision. And to me, it seems like, again, we're talking about functional companies in Insomniac. They're a functional company. I can trust them.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's not something that I think anyone should be particularly worried about or put much like real stock into. And also, that said, like, who knows? Maybe Perfect Dark comes out and it's terrible. And then, you know, people who worked at the studio say, oh, it all changed when this guy showed up.
Yep.
You know, perhaps Marvel's Wolverine comes out and it's terrible. And it's like, oh, it all changed when Brian Horton left.
Can you imagine if all of a sudden the next thing we hear about Wolverine, live service game, you get to play as all the Wolverines, and I'll be like, oh, that makes sense.
But I don't think that that's, you know, like, I don't think that we're going to be hearing those horror stories. Or if we do, I don't think that it'll be like, well, this one specific guy leaving was what like tanked this whole game. If that's even the case, it's going to be like, oh, no, like there were decisions being made and he got out when he could, you know.
I'm still a little nervous for that Wolverine game. Personally, and it's mostly because I am not creative enough to envision what that combat is going to be like.
Yes, I think that's actually a wonderful way to put it. I would agree. The only thing for me is I just like Insomniac. So
right,
you know, yeah. We'll see.
Like I can trust them, but like in my brain, I'm like, am I going to want to play like this Wolverine slashy game? Like that doesn't seem to be like sustainable for a long period of time. But
do we know who's voice acting in that game? Do we know who's playing Wolverine?
James Logan.
I mean, it's gonna be fucking Troy Baker, right?
Maybe. What if it's Hugh Jackman?
Now if it's Hugh Jackman. Now that might be something, huh?
Can you fucking imagine that? That would be.
I can, because he played him.
That'd be pretty special. And he turns around, you just see Hugh Jackman's little like face, and you're like, woo!
Oh yeah. No, I think that might. It won't happen. It won't happen. But he would be a good get. But I think they're trying. I mean, I have to imagine they're going for their own interpretation, right?
He turns around and starts singing, "I'm mutant 24601," and he just starts.
Yeah,
like,
see, if you put him in musical stuff, I'm down. You know what I mean? What other musicals was he in?
Music Man.
Yes, and also, but I'm thinking of, like, the movies. Was he in the movie for Music Man? No, right?
No, he was just on Broadway doing it.
Yeah, Music Man. It's from Ferris Bueller, right? You know what I'm talking about? The movie.
Matthew Broderick.
Yes, Matthew Broderick, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Les Mis, he did, and he was also, what's that movie about the circus? Greatest Showman.
Oh, Greatest Showman. What's that movie when he had the balls on his chin?
Huh?
You never seen this?
No.
Okay,
are you talking about
movie 43? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why are you bringing up movie 43 every fucking podcast, Justin?
Well, because number one is Hugh Jackman.
Every week.
You
brought this up. I've not thought about this movie, like, really ever. And you brought it up last week, too. Tell me.
Yes, more people need to know it. He's got a scrotum on his neck.
Yes, I do remember this. Yeah. Hugh Jackman movie 43. I've never seen this movie, by the way. No real interest.
How much did he make? He got paid scale $800 a day. Most of the A-list actors.
Damn, you got Jeremy Allen White in this movie?
There's a lot of people that honestly like shocked that it was made.
Liev Schreiber.
Yeah, and they
Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
Anna Faris. Emma Stone, I knew that. Kristen Bell, I knew that. Gerard Butler, Terrence Howard,
Gerard Butler,
Bob Odenkirk, Seth MacFarlane, Jared Dudley.
Who's that? Is that
he's a basketball player.
Oh, I should have known that.
Yeah, they got way too many people in this movie. For it to be as
shitty as it was, you know what I mean?
How do you even get people on board with this? You know what I mean? Like, who directed this?
Like,
who made this movie?
The thing was, they're like, we're just going to be doing some, like, we're going to catch you out in the wild. We're not actually filming this. We're just going to be doing some fun improv scenes. How about we try this out? All right, first, let's get this scrotum on your neck.
Hold on a second. Oh, that's right. Because it is, it's like an anthology. It's 14 different directors because each person directed their own thing.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, it's insane. If you go to the Wikipedia page for this thing and you look at directed and written by, it's insanity.
It's how they get their SAG cards. They're like, we need to be directors. We need to get this. But the only way to do it is for us to watch this shitty or make this shitty thing.
Make the shitty movie. Yeah. Which one did Bob Odenkirk write?
None
of this was funny, right? I mean, none of this was funny.
Oh, no, they're all bad.
Yeah. Anyway. I think that's going to do it for us. I think it has to. Yeah, thanks so much for listening. If you're interested, you can join our Discord server. Link to that is in the description of this episode. You can support us on Patreon. Patreon.com/hitboxpod. Become a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer. If not, that's fine. You can follow us on Twitter @hitboxpod. Rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. I think I hit all the beats there.
Nailed Justin, it. Nailed it.
You ever watch that show, Nailed It, and they still making that?
No, was that like what is it?
It was a baking competition, but all the people who are on it they don't know how to bake.
Nailed it.
It's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they said. Nicole Byer was the host. She's a funny comedian.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's gonna do it for us. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
All right, I'll stop recording.